Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show. I'm your host, Phil Huff, with my co-host, Julie Calamine. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Phil. How are you?
I'm good. A little chilly this morning on the way in, and I know why now. Looking at the National Weather Service's stuff, it's 19 degrees out. Who knew?
That is chilly, but it also means beautiful, beautiful, clear sky.
Yeah. Have you been getting out and doing anything fun?
I have. I've been out skiing.
Oh, yeah. Cross country, downhill,
a bit of each. And I've got to tell you, Schweitzer has been beautiful the last few days. Yeah, get out there, folks.
That's what everybody says. We got out for a hike more than a snowshoe last week, but with some fresh snow on the ground, hoping to get the snowshoes out soon. Beautiful blue skies lately.
I know. A rare blue opportunity here in Sandpoint, and it really revives the spirit.
Well, we've got a lot of outdoor stuff to talk about, but before we get to that, let's look at the weather in a little more extended way. And according to the National Weather Service, today will be mostly sunny with a high right around freezing, 32 degrees. Tonight, we have a chance of flurries with patchy fog, a low of 24. And then the rest of the week, there's just these snowflakes on the little icons every day. Varying chances of snow ranging from 30 to 90% up and down Wednesday through Saturday. So it looks like we've got some of the white stuff for the skiers in the forthcoming weather this week.
Yes, Phil, this is good news for both the snowshoers, the Nordic skiers, and also the alpine skiers. Great news for us all.
And our weather. We need the snowpack for the coming year. We need that snow.
Yes, we do.
Well, why don't we move ahead? We've got a pretty full show. We've got a couple folks on the first half here who are going to be talking about climbing, and particularly local climbing opportunities for training, getting out in the field, you know, with an accent on the women in the sport. And then coming in towards the bottom of the hour, we have Brad Smith and Shelby Herbert from ICL. We're going to talk about an event coming up tonight. But let's move on to our first guests. Julie, do you want to do a proper introduction?
Yes, I'd like to do that. Well, I'm introducing two very interesting gals who live and work here in the Sandpoint area, and they're involved in a sport that I'm not that familiar with, and it's rock climbing and a bit of mountaineering, but mainly mainly rock climbing. And our first guest is Sarah Clintworth. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
So happy to have you here. You're involved with rock climbing and also with helping women understand about it and learn more about rock climbing.
Yeah, that's definitely correct.
Okay, and then I'm going to introduce Katie, too. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning.
Cartier Luthy?
It's Katie Luthy.
Okay, very good. Cartier keeps getting in there somehow. I don't know. Anyway, you're very involved. You're the president on the board of the Sandpoint Rock Gym.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the morning show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good to be here.
I'd like for you both to tell us just a bit about how you came to be involved in your sport and also how you came to be here in Sandpoint. Let's start with you, Sarah.
Yeah. So I moved to this area back in 2004. So I've definitely lived longer here than anywhere before in my life. So it feels like home for me. And I guess the very first time I ever did any rock climbing was in 2003. It was like a kind of a single incident. And then I really didn't do it again until one more single incident in 2011 when I climbed. I guess for lack of a better word, I climbed Chimney Rock, which, I mean, there's some really easy routes up that.
An incident almost sounds like an accident.
It was not an accident. It wasn't a negative. It wasn't bad. I guess
a single opportunity.
And then I didn't do much until I think it was like 2012 that I had the opportunity to really start doing it in a more serious way. And as soon as I had that chance, I was like, oh, yes, I'm all about this. I want to do this.
So tell us a little bit more about what drew you to the sport. What connected with you?
You know, in the beginning, it just sounded like a cool adventure. Like, ooh, you know, you're going to go up high and like climb on rocks. And that sounds pretty adventurous, a little scary. You know, I actually am kind of afraid of heights. but, you know, after I started learning the basics, and like I was very fortunate to have some amazing women to learn from who taught me how to do it safely, I really just kind of fell in love with the movement. It can be really meditative. You know, you can kind of approach it in whatever way suits you the best. There are people who are always like pushing the risk envelope, you know, to a pretty large degree. But you can you can choose to focus on different aspects. And I guess if I had to put it into one sentence, I feel like you can kind of find this like a flow state where you just feel like you're kind of dancing, and it's not like it's effortless. You still have to put effort in, but it just feels really smooth and beautiful. And you can do that at whatever level you're at. It doesn't, you don't have to be like, you don't have to be climbing like a certain grade or a certain level to hit that point. It's kind of, I think it's similar to any other athletic activity, like skiing. I find it in skiing, even volleyball. So, and the movement is just really fun. It's a really cool way to be able to use your body.
Mm-hmm. So. And it happens in some pretty unique and lovely places. So you can get yourself out into some pretty great places that folks don't get to every day.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I definitely appreciate that part too.
So let's hear from Katie. Tell us about how you got involved with the sport and how you came to Sandpoint.
Sure. So I moved to Sandpoint in 2014. I came via Alabama. And in Alabama, everything's very flat and there's not a lot, not a lot of vertical relief there. And so when I moved here, all of a sudden there were a lot of people saying, here's some ways to get involved and here's how to get outside. And so started trying some different things and heading outside with some different folks. And what I think is really great about rock climbing is you can climb with someone who's really, really strong, and there can be a route nearby that's like really hard, and then there can be really easy routes next, like right next door to it. So there's a lot of ways to get involved regardless of how much experience you have, how afraid of heights you are, what your risk tolerance is, that type of thing. So there really is something for everybody if you're willing to give it a shot.
It's a, you know, it's the same question. Tell us what draws you to it on a deeper level.
So I really like being outside, and I really enjoy the places that rock climbing then allows me to be able to go. So just one of my favorite places in the world right now is Smith Rock State Park, and a lot of the climbing there is a bit above my level, but I just love being there and being a part of that community and people who are out and hiking and biking and climbing and doing all sorts of different things. And so the places that I get to go are really the thing that keep me going.
Where is Smith Rock State Park?
It's just north of Bend, Oregon.
Yeah, it's a mecca for climbing, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Yeah. And there's quite a few meccas, and we're going to get to maybe some of the local mini meccas in a bit. But
yes. And, you know, I'm thinking that Sandpoint, Idaho may not be the mecca of rock climbing, and yet you're both here. How did you come to be here, Sarah?
Well, I moved here, I guess I was living in Utah. I kind of jumped around a lot before I ended up here, but I moved here looking for like a certain lifestyle, really, is what it comes down to. Kind of looking for a place that I could afford to be, that maybe I could eventually, you know, own a home or own some property and not have to like be enslaved to the payment for the rest of my life. So, yeah, nice. I would say that's really why I ended up here, the lifestyle.
A lot going on, and you think you be able to afford to be here at some point.
I hope so.
Yeah, good. Very good. And Katie, how about you? How did you get to be here?
It was kind of like a weird job transition in my life that happened, then kind of a whole bunch of things lined up that there was a job available, and I said, all right, I'll give it a shot. I'm looking for something new, and I've ended up here, and can't believe it took me this long to get here.
Yeah, there's that Long Bridge moment we talk about, but there's also a mountain connection moment that's part of that Long Bridge. It keeps people here.
I think it's very telling that, you know, all you have to say is the Long Bridge moment. I think everybody knows what that means.
We do.
Yeah. So, you know, give us an overview of the sport of climbing and how it fits in a broader context to other outdoor sports that people often associate with climbing, or the ruggedness, mountaineering or alpineering, and tell us about how everything fits together.
Well, I don't think either of us are necessarily like historical buffs on this, but I'll just try I'll try not to make too many blunders here. You know, I think it's been a long, many, many centuries of like man wanting to climb mountains, you know. So mountaineering is not a new activity. I would say that sport climbing or the kind of rock climbing that we're talking about has kind of come from mountaineering to some degree. So mountaineering, and Katie, you're more the mountaineer than me. Correct me if I'm wrong. But mountaineering is more about like reaching the top of a peak. And there can be a certain amount of technical climbing involved, which would be like being roped up using like crampons and ice axes and that kind of stuff. But there would also be probably a pretty large component of just like walking, just hiking.
Mm-hmm. Sure. A question that I have is rock climbing a tool that you're using as you're becoming a mountaineer, or are they completely separate and different? Or are they
They're kind of related, because when you are mountaineering, there may be times where you do have to do a pitch of rock climbing to be able to do it. And so you may, when you're mountaineering, you may walk across a glacier field. You may do some mixed climbing. So it's like part ice, part rock. And so depending on the environment you're getting into, all of these elements do come in together and do work together to help people attain their objectives.
So there's other skills involved too.
Yeah, there's a lot of crossover of the skill sets, I would say. But then, like, if you're rock climbing, and I'm doing air quotes for people who can't see me.
they don't translate to radio as you, well. But like, you use your voice. I'm
vocalizing the air quotes. Rock climbing, you really aren't hiking. Yeah. I mean, typically you might hike to where you're going to climb, but once you're climbing, you're not. You're pretty much just climbing straight up the rock. Yeah. So
you're going up.
Yeah.
And yes. I think earlier Katie touched on, it's not necessarily about the fastest way. It's about the route that you're selecting. And there can be routes that are easier or faster and other ones that are more challenging. And certainly there's a lot of mountains where you've got that really difficult multi-pitch descent, but you can go around to the backside of the mountain and just walk up.
Right. Half Dome, for instance.
Yeah. Half Dome comes to mind.
Yeah.
I'm thinking also of the east face of Scotchman Peak, which I know some ice climbers covet, but I wouldn't say it's an easier way up the trail, but well, it's easier to go up the steep trail. It's still hard.
The climbers don't generally pick, I mean, they're not going to pick the easiest way all around, because as soon as you qualify it as climbing, there's usually, like, there might be an easier way. There might be a hike up or something. Not always, but.
I think, you know, and I have a limited exposure to climbing, and there are different ways to approach it. There is the competitive mindset. And when I was in my 20s, I knew that competitive mindset well. And the people I associated with climbing were competitors. You know, it's trying to outdo each other or outdo the rock. And yet there is this element of it that appeals to so many people that's much more about the movement, the grace, the meditation with the rock. And it's that difference, I think, that we can explore a little bit today.
I think so. And it may bring in the topic of your work with women and rock climbing, because, Sarah, your emphasis is on working with women and teaching them to learn about rock climbing. Tell us about that and how you came to that.
You know, not, I'm going to try really hard not to stereotype too generally, but climbing historically, and it kind of started in the 30s and the 40s is when people started doing more technical climbing. It was very much like a male dominated sport, and not to in any way disparage the male approach to things, but it has kind of developed a feel of like always pushing hard and kind of, that you're always trying to climb as hard physically as you possibly can. And there's certain things that have kind of come with the experience of the minority of women wanting to learn how to climb, that a lot of the time they end up having to kind of learn from a guy, which, again, that's not always a bad thing. I mean, there's tons of amazing guys out there who are great teachers, totally understanding, and don't create like a negative experience. But I would say also that when you climb with just women, it's kind of like anything else. It's a very different feeling. It's not necessarily better. I'm not trying to create like a superiority or inferiority about the experiences, but it's just very different. And I was really fortunate because I, outside of a couple of introductory climbs, I pretty much learned with a bunch of women. And there's a really big growing movement in the world right now of women who want to get into climbing and really want to be able to do it with other women. And I've been kind of fortunate to be part of that on a small level, like here in Sandpoint, but then also on a larger scale through some women's climbing festivals. And that really, it just got me thinking a lot about how cool it is to be able to offer that to women, because, you know, on a practical level, there might be women who really want to try climbing, but they're a little hesitant about putting themselves out there when maybe they aren't going to be able to, you know, be as physically strong as the people that they might be looking at climbing with. And they might just feel more comfortable climbing with other women.
It's also really more encouraging to have role models, people who are like us doing something. And that gives us the sense that we can do it too, whatever the sport is.
Yeah. So, you know, I haven't met any women that are like, I don't want to climb with men. And I certainly don't feel that way. I have some really amazing male climbing partners and I appreciate all of them, but I really love what happens when you get a bunch of women together to climb or to mountaineer or whatever, anything.
It'd be great to hear your thoughts on that, Katie.
Yeah, I think so. Locally, we have the Sandpoint Rock Gym, and it's a small climbing facility. But one of the great things that we're trying to do is about once a month is try to have a ladies' climb night. And so what I think it's great is that it allows women a chance to come in and climb in the gym. And it's women only. And we get women who have never had rock climbing shoes on their feet. They walk in, they're like, I don't know about this. I don't know what I'm doing here. And then all the way up to women who climb regularly. And I think it creates a really strong community and allows people to learn from each other. And just some really good community building happens in that space.
So this is a good point for you to tell us a little bit more about the Sandpoint Rock Gym for those who aren't familiar with it. I think it's still one of the areas, the real hidden assets that people go, oh, we have a climbing gym here?
I know. So we're located over on Church Street in the Greenery. We're not in the rock, in the Greenery Tower, which everyone's usually like, oh, you must be able to climb there. And unfortunately, that's not the case. But it's a small bouldering gym, which means that there are no ropes, there's no harnesses involved. And so our walls top out at about 12 feet or so. The gym's been around since 2010. And we do a couple days, it's all volunteer run. So it's a nonprofit. And everyone from the board of directors down to the folks who open the gym for open hours are volunteers. And so we offer memberships that allow people access to the gym when they want it. And then we do have volunteers who are high schoolers and young adults who, in exchange for a membership, open the gym a couple days a week and allows for people to come in and just give it a shot some afternoon.
So people, aren't members, can drop in as a guest and try it out?
They can, yes, during our open hours, which we publish on our website and then on our Facebook page.
What's the website address?
www.sandpointrockgym.com.
So easy.
You know.
It's easy. And there must be a few requirements, though, for those that drop in. Can they just come in and start climbing the wall, or do they need to have a bit of basic training?
Nope. So you can walk in and have never climbed before. We have shoes that people are able to use. We do require folks to sign a waiver, and then kids who are under 15 do need an adult to be in the gym with them. But people can walk in saying, I have no idea what I'm doing, help me out. And one of our volunteers will get them set up with shoes and give them some really good instruction on what they should try to do.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed to say I haven't been inside. So how large a facility is it? How many people can climb at once?
Probably start topping out at about 12 people. It's okay. A pretty small facility. We've got climbing in the front. We've got some training gear in the back. But it is the flow of the members seems to work, and there's doesn't seem to ever be more than that 12 to 15 at a time.
Do you find it something that appeals to small groups of people?
Yeah, we definitely get groups if we work with some of the boarding schools in the area, and they'll bring groups of kids in. We have groups of friends who come in and climb together. There's on Thursday nights, there's a group of adults that tend to come in and climb together. So people do definitely have community around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that there were classes or opportunities at least to learn. Is that how formal is that? Is it as formalized as classes, or is it more informal?
Yeah, we don't have specific classes, but again, a lot of it is a basic orientation when people come in for the first time, and people do a really good job helping each other out, giving each other tips and that type of thing.
Okay, so it's kind of an informal but a great learning opportunity.
The great thing about rock climbing is there's no rules. And so it's like it's learning the movement. It's doing what feels comfortable. Some people will climb to the top. Some people say, heck no, and just kind of work their way around the walls.
There are no rules, but there are my experience with climbers are there's some really decided camps on how to approach the sport, especially outside in terms of traditional or sport climbing, fixed protection or things you carry along with us. And I'd like to explore that topic a little bit with you, but tell us first what's available inside the gym for instruction in each of those areas.
So again, we are bouldering only, so there's no harnesses, no ropes. And so the gym is designed really for people to work on movement, work on strength, and work on technique.
So that means they're not attached to anything. They're climbing boulders inside your...
Correct. Yep, so we have a really good floor so that if people do come off the wall, there's a pretty good cushioned floor that's going to catch them.
So maybe this is a good opportunity for you to describe the different kinds of climbing in a little more thorough fashion than my lame attempt.
So Oh, boy. Yeah, so there's a couple of different types of climbing in it. Again, I say that there's no rules because and people do fight about all sorts of different things and pick on each other over, on how they get different places. But there's the idea of sport climbing, which means that there's permanent fixed bolts attached to a wall that then you clip a piece of gear called called a quick draw into that bolt as you're working your way up the wall. There's also something called traditional climbing, which you're using more gear that comes in and out of the wall. So there's things called cams and nuts that you can stick into cracks that then it does get removed as you climb up.
Yeah, we think of the classic vision of the mountain climber as this small little hammer and a metal iron piton, but it's really much more evolved these days.
It is, yes. And pitons definitely still have a place depending on what you're doing in some of the higher alpine climbing. The majority of the climbers that you're going to hear about are either sport climbing or using traditional methods.
There's a real ethos around pounding something in the rock permanently versus putting something in that's temporary that you take out on your way down.
Correct.
And tell me a little bit about the demographics of the folks that visit the rock gym. I know your focus is on helping women learn to rock climb. Are there many women or are they mainly men? What do you see?
That's a better question for Katie because I don't actually know much about the membership numbers.
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. We have kids as young as 5 who come in with their parents and climb. We have some folks into their 60s who climb. It's men, women, girls, boys, probably more men, but we're probably looking at a 60-40 breakdown right now. So there's definitely, depending on when you're in there, could skew your view a little bit. But if you come in on January 22nd from 6 to 8, you'll think it's all women all the time.
I think so many people, the idea of bouldering is something that appeals to a lot of folks who even may not go into rock climbing. But they just see, as a kid, you see those rocks outside and you want to clamber over them and they seem to be towering over you and they're 5 feet high, but there's this natural inclination to it. But I think that that can lead then to some absolutely crazy stuff like trying to climb El Capitan with the free climb it the whole way. Tell us about how one gets from one to the other. Or do you?
I think most people are not going to make it to that.
I'm preparing for Banff coming up this weekend. I'm watching all the crazy films.
And I don't want to dive too deep down the rabbit hole here because if you're not really a climber, it might start to be really kind of obscure. But like bouldering outside of the practicalities of it, in the sense that like you're not using a rope, you're not wearing a harness. Basically, you're climbing something that's typically less than like 15 feet tall. And you have a crash pad below you. So it's in terms of gear, people are drawn to it, I think, because of the simplicity. All you really need is like your chalk bag, your shoes, and your crash pad, or multiple crash pads, depending on where you're climbing.
And that freedom of movement.
And what is a crash pad for those of us who aren't familiar?
It's basically what it sounds like. It's a huge, thick foam pad that usually they're, depending on the style you buy, some of them will fold up, and they're usually set up so that you can carry them on your back because you might walk a ways to get to the bouldering. So it's just a way to like protect yourself because the thing about bouldering that is something to really be considered is that if you fall, like if you slip, you're gonna hit the ground. Like there's no way around that. And so the crash pad is there to make sure that you can hopefully land safely. Whereas if you're climbing with ropes, hopefully mostly, unless you're really pushing the envelope or unless some really untoward accident happens, if you fall, you're gonna be caught by a rope. You're presumably not gonna hit the ground. Like you might jar, So that's kind of a big difference to keep in mind because, there's some injuries that happen commonly with bouldering that aren't as common with other types.
It's that realm of the sport where you're climbing as high as people would with ropes, but you're not using ropes.
Right.
There's an appeal to that for some.
There is, and I think that is very small. So I think Alex Honnold right now is, you see the movie Free Solo, and he climbed El Cap without a rope. And there are going to be very few people who can get to that point. And he did a lot of training. There was a lot of work. I think the movie does a really good job showing the level of preparedness he went through to get to that point. It wasn't just that I wake up and I decide that I'm going to go do this someday. There was a lot of work involved.
And so there is the morning show disclaimer. Don't do this at home, kids.
There's also the fact that I think he's a bit of an anomaly. He's not, you really can't even get to that level just by working hard. Like you have to have a particular combination of traits and physical ability to be able to do that. And there's a reason he's the only person person who's ever done it.
So for those listeners who are going to the Banff Film Festival this weekend, if you get inspired, have a reality check, come to the gym, learn some skills, meet some people, and have them take you out and show you the different methods.
There's a marathon between like starting out and like where he is.
Yeah,
for sure.
A marathon, probably an ultra.
or multiple ultras.
And that, you know, I sense that your mission is not to produce those kind of guys, but to introduce more folks to rock climbing and women in particular. And you're a nonprofit. Is there a mission? Is there a particular mission for the gym? Or
We're trying to really build the climbing community in Sin Point. We're like, we're kind of a jumping off point to a lot of different places. And so it really to be able to give people a space to learn to climb and to be able to practice climbing and to build that community locally.
Great I think that's mission. A wonderful thing. And there's so many people here in Sandpoint in the broader community who are very much interested in the outdoors and interested in sports like this who are new to it. And this is a great opportunity for them not only to learn more, practice some skills, but meet some people who are like-minded and find out where to go. Because there are some wonderful places locally to go without giving up your favorite fishing holes. Do you want to, or rock climbing areas, do you want to comment a little on the local opportunities?
Well, I think I want to just say that with regard to climbing, like generally speaking, climbers are pretty open about that. Okay. I mean, there's a whole like app that's designed to help you find climbing areas wherever you are in the world, really. And we're lucky that we do actually have like a good handful of places within like an hour's drive.
Tell us about those.
Well, go ahead, so Katie.
I think depending on what you're looking for, it's like there's an area out in Laclede that a lot of people rock climb at. And then there's a great area down in Post Falls called Chameleon Park. And the park is, I believe, owned by Avista, and there's a lot of oversight that happens there. But it's a great place for people to really get a good introduction to the sport if they're traveling with someone who knows what they're doing. But a lot of moderately graded things. And then you get into Spokane, and there's a lot of harder stuff as well as some moderate stuff there as well. So we're kind of in a place that has a lot of opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But not all the rock around here is the same. We have several different mountain ranges, and some of them are the harder, more granitic type of rock, and some are the softer sedimentary rock. So good to use that app and find people who know where to go.
Yeah, it's super useful. It's called Mountain Project, and it's free, and it's pretty, you know, it's definitely a good place to start if you're trying to find a place to climb.
Repeat that, mountainproject.com
mountainproject.org. Yeah, if you can go to their website, or if you have like the app store on your phone. Usually people use it with their phone as an app, and you just search Mountain Project.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Sarah, we keep coming kind of around to women and rock climbing and mountaineering, and we haven't really heard specifically from you about how your work and your goals and trying to introduce more women to the sport. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So it's kind of in a couple different areas. I am also a photographer, and so I've been doing some work with an organization called Flash Foxy with their Women's Climbing Festival, which happens twice a year. So that's kind of in a more of a support role, I would say, just providing photography services for them. And then an area that I've started working in and that I'm still very much developing is offering learning opportunities to women where they can incorporate learning the hard skills of climbing, which would be things like, you know, belaying, how to tie into the rope, how to stay safe, basically. And then climbing technique as well, like what's the most efficient way to climb up something, along with what you could maybe call like softer skills, which one of the things I love about climbing and what it's done for me in my life is it's offered me some opportunities to learn about myself and to be able to develop ways to deal specifically like with fear. There's a lot of mindfulness that you can practice in climbing, and climbing, I think, offers a really unique opportunity where you can be in a situation where you are completely safe and yet your fear will come up in a way that you have this amazing opportunity to work with it while you're completely safe, even though in some ways you don't necessarily feel that way, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So what I'm kind of trying to do is offer women the opportunity to work within that container, to be able to use climbing, not just for climbing's sake, because of course it's awesome on its own, but to be able to say, like, what can you learn about yourself? What kind of skills can you build for yourself through climbing that are also transferable to the rest of your life? Because dealing with fear, anxiety, that kind of stuff is something you can really practice when you're climbing, but then it's so applicable to the mm-hmm. rest of life. I mean, how many times a day do we have some level of anxiety or, you know, depending on what you have going on in your life, you might have really high levels of anxiety, and climbing offers a really cool way to work with that, I think. And so I've been doing some private teaching with a group of young ladies, and that's been going really well. But my goal and my plan is to work with a guiding company that's based here in Sandpoint to create opportunities outside that women can sign up for, workshops, clinics, things like that, where we would actually go climb outside. But we would be incorporating some of these like kind of personal growth, I guess, sort of skills and like activities to be able to take those things out of just the climbing realm.
What a wonderful resource to have here locally. Well, thank you for sharing that and bringing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we're just about out of time. Any last minute items that we haven't covered you want to mention?
I want to just say that I think the Rock Gym is an amazing thing. I think we're so lucky to have it, and I'm so grateful for Katie because yeah. she keeps it going. And I do think I just want to emphasize how very lucky we are to have it, because it isn't it's not a for-profit thing. Most bigger communities have these like real fancy gyms where they're making money and it's like a business. This is definitely, from my understanding, like from the beginning of it, there was just a few people that basically like got together because they loved climbing so much and they made it happen, and it's still here. And it takes the whole community to keep it going. So
I was just about to add that. Yep. It is definitely a community sort of thing that we've got going on, and Sandpoint is so known for that. As an example, us here at Community Radio and you all, and we weren't even really very aware that you existed, and so it's our job here at Community Radio to try to point out these opportunities for people that are really unique and pretty neat.
Yeah, it's a wonderful asset. Great community service.
Yes.
So if you've just tuned in, you've been listening to the first part of the show here with Sarah Clintworth and Katie Luthy talking about the Sandpoint Climbing Gym and women in outdoor climbing. And it's if you missed any or all of it and just hear these words, tune into the podcast at KRFY.org later on. This is listener-supported community radio for North Idaho, 88.5 KRFY. We're going to take a short music break, and then we're going to come back with Brad Smith and Shelby Herber from Idaho Conservation League to talk a little bit about caribou. But right now, we're going to listen to Joe Walsh. Joe Walsh, Rocky Mountain Way. Nice segue from topics that deal with mountains and the Rockies, right, Julie?
That's right. And an improvement over The Hills Are Alive with The Sound of Music, which is what one of us wanted to play.
Well, we wanted something to wake people up here with Joe Walsh's guitar.
Much better choice, Phil. Yeah.
So welcome back to The Morning Show here at 88.5 FM, KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. The second part of this morning's topic is going to be on caribou, and we're going to hear from Brad Smith, director of Idaho Conservation League here in Sandpoint, who's going to talk about caribou, and Shelby Herber, community outreach associate, who's going to tell us about an event tonight. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks, Phil.
Yeah. So why don't we start off with it's January, so we get the state of everything. What's the state of the caribou, Brad?
Well, the state of the caribou, unfortunately, is not a good one. Presently, there's one female caribou left in the Selkirk Mountains between Sandpoint and Nelson, British Columbia. And it's a story that is tragic. And Shelby and I were talking outside the studio, and she called it defeating. I thought that was an appropriate word. But I think what we have to do is sort of reframe this issue and think about this story as both a reminder of what can happen to other species if we don't take action. I lost my train of thought.
Well, and maybe an optimistic story for what we can do to
at least have some tools
them.
Here.
Yes, yeah. We've got some things we can.
So the lone caribou, there are plans to capture it and take it to Revelstoke, British Columbia, where they have a captive breeding program. And that's where I was going. I think this story is also a call to action on caribou. You know, we're going to lose our lone caribou here in the Selkirks. It's not too late for mountain caribou. There are 15 other herds in Canada that really our neighbors to the north, they need to take action to save those herds. And hopefully one day, if they do take action in Canada and the caribou populations rebound, then it is possible that one day caribou could be reintroduced to the Selkirks on the United States side of the border.
Successful recovery depends on more than the captive breeding program with the animals. It's also about managing the habitat with the expectation that they might come back one day and at least maintaining status quo, if not actually improving the habitat for their future success.
That's absolutely right. You know, the primary threat here is the logging of the old growth forests that caribou depend on. So these old growth trees, they also are places where tree lichens grow, and that is the sole food source of caribou during the winter months. So if you take away that habitat, which takes 150 years to grow, then you take away their food source. So we're kind of, in a way, paying for the sins of our neighbors to the north, because a long time ago, we stopped logging the old growth habitat here in the United States that caribou depend on, but we've got so little of the overall range, which extends much farther north into Canada, that at this point it is really dependent upon the Canadian provincial government in British Columbia taking action to save what old growth habitat remains.
Mm-hmm. So before we get to Shelby, and I'm going to ask you a question that's a big topic we could spend an hour on, but give us the minute or two or 3 minute version of why should we care about caribou?
We should care about caribou because, you know, if we lose caribou, then it's sort of like, you know, losing your arm or something. We lose sort of part of who we are and part of our identity. And it should also serve maybe as a warning. It's, you know, the proverbial canary in the coal mine that, There's something larger going on here with our wildlands and our ecosystems. And if we sit idly and don't take action to reverse loss of habitat overall, it could affect other species.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yes, and to that, we have an event, don't we, Shelby?
Yeah. Tonight, both ICL and the nonprofit publisher Braided River will be hosting an event, a multimedia event over at the Little Panada here in Sandpoint called Caribou Rainforest From Heartbreak to Hope. And we'll be bringing in David Moskowitz, an expert wildlife tracker, photographer, and author who will share his work with this species. So it should be extremely exciting. Tickets are available through Idaho Conservation League's website, idahoconservation.org, and underneath our events calendar, you can find the Eventbrite link. Otherwise, folks have a couple other options. They could call our office, 208-265-9565, and I can help them out today. Or you're welcome to get tickets at the door, but I have a feeling they may be going quickly this afternoon.
Yeah, the Little Panda is not as large as the main room, so yeah.
You may be gambling if you wait for the door. So.
That's right.
Now, David was part of the film that was around about a year ago. He's a great photographer. Is this a film or a slideshow or a combination of?
I take it, I have actually not seen this particular presentation, but I take it that it is a combination of photographs and short videos. And of course, David, he's an expert wildlife tracker. He's spent lots of hours out in the woods looking for these caribou and, you know, shooting film and taking photographs. So some of the photos that I've seen are just stellar, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. And it's a book, of course, From Heartbreak to Hope. And is it mainly a photographic compendium, or is there? Have you all seen it? Have you looked at the book yet?
I have not seen the book yet either.
I haven't
Nor
seen
have
it.
I.
So. But it will be on sale tonight.
Just the glossy cover up online. Yeah,
and you can get it signed by David if you'd like.
His books are excellent, so I would have high expectations for it. But yeah.
All right. And there is hope, though. Yes, we've got caribou remaining in Canada, and They are working, as Brad mentioned, at Revelstoke to maintain herd there, and there are still some forests. But this is a call to action, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It really is.
It is, and it's, I think, a good reminder, too, that what this requires is landscape work that is a big collaborative landscape, lots of stakeholders here in the U.S., and then you add in the cross-border Canadian element and how important it is for us to be reaching out and working with our neighbors, whether they're neighbors within our county or our state or the multiple states and international boundaries.
That's absolutely right. You know, the wildlife, they don't recognize our political borders. So we have to work together with our neighbors if we're going to conserve them.
Mm-hmm. This may be a question you can't answer, guys, but is Idaho Fish and Game involved in any of the, just even the transport of the last remaining caribou? Is that something that our Fish and Game gets into?
Well, Idaho Fish and Game was actually the agency that originally petitioned the Fish and Wildlife Service for their listing back in 1983. And since they've been involved in various efforts to try to recover the herd in the U.S. side of the Selkirks through some by taking some caribou from Canada and transplanting them and changing some of the management around the habitat and whatnot, I don't know if they are, if Idaho Fish and Game is specifically involved in the effort to capture this last female caribou and take it to Revelstoke, or if that's going to be done by the tribes or our neighbors in British Columbia.
So many entities when you think about it, the tribe, the Fish and Game.
That's all that cooperation and coordination. It takes a pretty massive effort.
There's actually also a big chunk of state of Idaho endowment lands and caribou habitat as well. So there's a lot of entities involved.
Well, we'll have to have you back on as things develop. And this is going to be a long-term project. So fodder for a number of morning shows to come. We're running a little out of time before we go. You want to mention the event one more time for this evening?
Yeah. Tonight it's called Caribou Rainforest from Heartbreak to Hope at the Little Panada here in town.
7 p.m.
Yep, starting at 7 p.m.
All right.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, Shelby and Brad. We're going to take a short break here, and then we're going to come back with some community calendar events, so stay tuned. Right now, we're going to listen to a group called Mountain for those classic rock heads from the 70s. Mountain. Mountain with their song Mississippi Queen from the album of the name of Climbing.
Perfect.
Which just seemed to work into this morning's show with the whole theme of mountain and climbing and women in mountain and climbing.
Yes, and everything about Sandpoint. It was a good song choice.
It was a fun show. If you missed any of it and want to hear the podcast, come to KRFY.org later on today, and you can listen to both of our topics, the women in climbing for the first half and the caribou for the second. And morning shows coming up this week. We're in a brand new year, but a lot of the topics will continue to roll through that are of active interest to the community. Tune in tomorrow morning, January 16th. Morning show host Susie Perez and Gene Girth will be talking with the Citizen Climate Change spokesperson Gabriel Dubendorfer and Dr. Steve Gahn about an upcoming community event, The Big Carbon Fix. A second interview at 9 o'clock with the upcoming Women's March organizers. There's so much going on this week that we need two morning show slots tomorrow to even fill it in. Thursday, January 17th at 8 a.m., join hosts Jim Healy and Jack Peterson for the Thursday edition of the morning show. Their guests will be Beth Weber, director of the festival at Sandpoint Music Camp for Students. Then next week, we're back on Tuesday. Who knew? We're always back on Tuesday.
That's right. It comes round and round.
Sharon Bosley and Chantilly Higby from Lake Pondre Waterkeepers, two new people who are doing their programs and communications. We're going to welcome to Sandpoint, hear a little bit about what their new roles are with the Waterkeepers. That's at 8 a.m. Next Tuesday right here. Julie, what else do we have coming up this week?
Phil, Sandpoint? There is a lot coming up. It's my events calendar that's printed is 10 pages for this week.
Wow. Well, we're not going to get through them all, but let's hit the highlights.
I'll do my best. Well, as you know, tonight is the Caribou Rainforest, so the film. So film, well, and with Moskowitz. So everything. We want to try and encourage you to get to that tonight at 7 p.m. For tickets, call 208-265-9565. That's a big one. After that, we have lots happening. And I won't get into the pipe cleaner and animals craft twisties. We're going to skip that one at the library. But however, tomorrow we have on the 16th a TED Talk. Phil, you know about TED Talks.
They're so fun.
Interesting. Anyway, there's one happening here. Talk inside the mind of a master procrastinator. Oh boy, that's my topic.
And so where here is that?
It's going to be, first of all, featuring Tim Urban, and it's a hilarious insight into the mind of a procrastinator. And it's happening from 4:30 until 6:30 p.m. in the Sandpoint Library. And again, that's tomorrow. So I'm free.
So I think Thursday I'll decide whether to go or not.
Well, late tomorrow night anyway. That would be your time to think about it. There's an art also tomorrow, Art for Human Rights exhibit. That's also at the Sandpoint. Well, it's at the Sandpoint High School Library. Mm-hmm. And they're hosting Art for Human Rights. And we've heard about that from Jim and Jack. That's the 16th, 5:30 to 7 p.m. So
that should be a good show. That's been an ongoing series of shows over the years in Sandpoint here, and some great student contributions to that body of work.
I agree, not to be missed. Also on the 16th, bike movie night. So if you can't make the other two, you ought to at least go and see a bike movie. That's at 6 p.m. free, and bring your chair, and it's going to be at Greasy Fingers. So if you're into
those
bikes,
are lots of fun. It's not the season for biking unless you got the big fat studded tires, but it's the season to dream about biking.
To think about it. There are so many things on the 16th, Phil. I don't think anyone will get to them all, but one last, and then we'll move on to the rest of the week. The Big Carbon Fix. That's an evening with climate change scientist Steve Gahn. That's the one you just spoke about with Dr. Gahn, and that's going to bigcarbonfix.org or call 208-290-1349. But that's an interesting topic.
Where will that be shown?
Yes, in Sandpoint and at the high school auditorium. So lots of things happening at the high school. Now, this is an important date, Phil, not tomorrow, but the 17th, Coast Guard public comment deadline. If you're interested in commenting on two public improvements that happen to be related to railroad, they are still taking input for both the bridge across Lake Pendre and the bridge across Sand Creek, proposed railroad bridges. So if you're interested in commenting on that, you have until the 17th. You can do it two ways, by calling Steve Fisher at 206-220-7282 or email him at D3-PF-D13bridges@uscg.mil.
You could Google it. And like voting, democracy is a participatory activity. And if you don't make your voice heard, then the other guy's voice is the one that's heard. So
yes.
Do comment if you have something to say.
And it's with the Coast Guard, so I think that would be your Google source. Mm-hmm. Don't want to forget Banff Mountain Film Festival.
Yahoo! Once again.
This weekend from the 18th until the 20th. And it is, per our outline, it is a true gem in the midst of winter, and I agree. Now in its 23rd year of showing breathtaking adventure films. So many tickets are sold.
Yeah, I don't know if they're sold out yet or not, but they usually do sell out. So if you haven't got your tickets, get them now.
Yes, you can go online to the Panada, and occasionally there will be remaining tickets at local businesses, but panada.org would be the place to start.
Or watch Facebook for various contests.
That's right. 19th, the North Idaho Women's March, Phil. The community is invited to attend the North Idaho Women's March at Sandpoint Middle School. I don't think it's only for women.
No, I think they take brothers too. And like all good things in Sandpoint, we are a busy community and we're running out of time. And we do want to make sure we play this last song. It's a tribute. Julie, do you want to tell us about the tribute?
Yes. Carol Channing. She passed away. Recently, like yesterday. Yesterday or today.
So this is her song, but it's Louis Armstrong's version. You'll recognize it. We're going to go out with it.
Hello,
see you
darling.
Next Tuesday.
That's right.